podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Hello, it's Tour Live. Happy Friday, everyone. It's John Gibbons hosting. I'm joined by Mike Bancole, by Adam Smith, and by Harry Pryor. And we're looking ahead, obviously, to the Brentford game. But before then, part one, I'm going to be a little bit newsy because things have happened today in Liverpool land over the last 24 hours. There is things to talk about. There's the announcements that James Milner is leaving Liverpool that we're going to start with. There's all the fallouts or otherwise over God Save the King and what's going on tomorrow and Liverpool's decision that they are going to play our national anthem. And then we'll talk a little bit about the kit, but only a little bit because looking around, I don't think anyone's going to be too bothered, which is always the adult grown-up position to have, ladies and gentlemen. But we shall see. Maybe there's a lot of opinions. Who knows? Adam Smith's got opinions on everything. He loves it. Loves an opinion. Can't move with them. Fills his house full of them. No room for furniture. It's all opinions. Also in parts two and three, I spoke to Jay Coleman a few weeks ago about a quiz night that they're doing. So he's from LF Quiz and they're doing a big quiz night to commemorate, to mark Istanbul. Istanbul was good. You don't commemorate that. You celebrate. That is the word. Oh, all this jubilee nonsense or coronation nonsense is meddling with me head. Jay Coleman, he's doing a quiz night. He's got a quiz app. He's doing a quiz night. It's about Istanbul. It's going to be brilliant. He's going to sell it well, better than I did. We're also going to speak to Daniel Sanderson from Monday Al Mag. Monday Al is back, which is great news, and they're doing a lot of fantastic stuff. And so we got Dan to come in to talk about that and the new edition they've got as well. And then part four, we'll look ahead to Brentford. But Mike, James Milner, We knew we might go eventually. All things come to an end. The Brighton stuff kind of got ramped up last couple of days. Then it looks like they've dotted the I's, they've crossed the T's. He's off to Brighton. And I'm a bit sad.
I'm a bit sad too. And it's one of those that we've seen coming for a while. A bit like the Firmino news as well. We kind of saw the Firmino news coming from a mile off. But it's sad because these are players that we have gone on a journey with. You know, Milner was there right from the very start, right from Klopp's very first game. And especially in those first few seasons, the season where he plays at left back for the entire season, he's an integral member of the squad. He plugs in wherever the manager needs him, whether it's central midfield, whether it's at left back, whether it's at right back, and does a really, really good job. So it's a shame we're losing not just an important player or someone who was an important player at times, but someone who, by all accounts, has been important in terms of the culture at the club. And that's something that we as fans might not necessarily see as much. We see the evidence on that on the pitch, maybe, and in terms of what a club have achieved over the last few years. So it's a big loss, but I guess we're also in a position where it's time for new cultural leaders to stand up. So maybe a Trent Alexander-Arnold might be a new player that can be a kind of a cultural leader, and we're seeing the stuff he's doing off the pitch. He's someone that obviously has, you know, he's a very wise lad. So players like that, Andy Robertson, can assume more senior roles in the squad as we hopefully the summer signs some new players. But I mean, James Milner was a servant to the club, and I know there's obviously a lot of nonsense on Twitter about him and a lot of like snide comments about his ability as a footballer. But look, I think James Milner was a supremely talented footballer. Was he Steven Gerrard? Of course he wasn't Steven Gerrard, but he was still a really, really good footballer. I mean, to play at the level he has done for as long as he has done suggests that we're talking about a very capable footballer here. So wish him all the best at Brighton. I'm sure he'll do a lovely job there, and I'm sure De Zerbi will love him as much as De Zerbi loves Lallana. So it's a sad ending, but one we've all seen coming.
Yeah, James Milner came up in the press conference and Jürgen Klopp was asked about him, Harriet, and he said, "We wouldn't have achieved what we've done over the last 7.5 years without James Milner." But it just shows the esteem that the manager holds him in, and echoes what Mike was saying there, really, about these cultural architects, about these huge presences within the dressing room that have driven us to, will help drive us to the success. And Jürgen Klopp very much sees James Milner as one of them. And you can see that whenever he's on the pitch, whenever he's around the squad, you can see his influence. And also, he was a really good footballer.
Yeah, I think that was the main argument, wasn't it, really, for keeping him around, was not maybe that from a footballing point of view, he's absolutely integral to Liverpool moving forward, but more the fact that he is such a leader and he is such a big voice and someone who really commands respect. And I don't even just mean that from the players' perspective, I also mean that in the fans, and everyone really just gets him, don't they? And he's such like a great character, and I think we will really miss that. But there has been so much talk about summer and what needs to happen, and the fact that it does need to be kind of sentiment free. And I think this is a real sign that the decisions that are going to be made over the next 6 months are going to be very sentiment free. It is going to be getting rid of, clearing out some of the players that maybe Klopp doesn't feel are integral to the future anymore, and bringing in new ones. And it's just sad that it's the players that we really love for so many years that are going to be going out the door. But, you know, we were lucky enough to speak to him for the Klopp documentary, and he had so many incredible stories that he could really reflect on from his time at Liverpool. And you could see to him as a person kind of how much everything meant to him. And my favourite was him kind of retelling when they were winning the league, and Robertson was basically taking the piss out of everyone being like, we're going to win it, we're going to win it. And Henderson and Milner were like, right, let's just actually win it before we all say we're definitely won the league. And then COVID came and everything that afterwards happened. We did win it eventually. And he can be really proud that he was part of that team, that he was part of the team that won the Champions League, that he was part, like Mike said, of Klopp's build from the start. And then, I think there's only four or five players, isn't there, that have really been there throughout the whole journey. So yeah, we'll be very much missed, but we'll go with our absolute blessing, and hopefully we see lots of lovely content from him and Lallana in the future.
Yeah, it's, you know, Harriet talks there about the club needing to make tough decisions this summer, and you know that is right. And there are people, you know, with jobs like sporting director, Adam, you know, whose job it is to decide, you know, who should stay and who should go. And not necessarily just that, but also what sort of type of contracts we should be offering to people. Obviously, whatever was offered to Adam Lallana before that, and then to James Milner, now they've decided that sort of Brighton's a better move for them, whether that's, you know, playing time or just sort of wanted a change, longer contract. I don't know. These are decisions to be made, you know, by other people, really. We're football fans and we don't need to take emotion out of it. In fact, I normally throw more in, to be honest with you. I'm that sort of guy. And I'm very emotional when I think of James Milner. And I just, there's a part of me that would like to keep them all forever.
I think, firstly, sporting director Adam has got a good ring to it. So I don't know whether you want to have a word with anyone about that. But yeah, look, I think lots of things can be true at the same time. I think you can simultaneously be sad that he's leaving and also feel it's the right time for that to happen. And I think that if we're all being honest, the club is, and I am one of those people that does think that Jurgen Klopp operates on emotion a little bit too much when it comes to player contracts and renewals and things like that, and that maybe we should have been a little bit more hard-nosed with players at times. But I also agree with you that's not my job. So, you know, like when Jordan Henderson signed his new contract, I was jumping for joy because I love the man. I'd run through brick walls for him. You know, that's like, I think he's just amazing. I love him to bits. That's my job as a fan, right? My job as a fan is not to say, should we be giving him a new contract because he's a bit older now? Like, that's somebody at the club's job to be doing that. And I think that what we need is really, we need Henderson to be moving into the Milner role. And if that's going to happen, that means that you can't have a Milner. So it is the right time for him to move on. And that's, you know, but we can all be sad about that because I completely agree with Mike and I agree with Harriet that, you know, what a role he's played in this team. You know, he will forever, in my eyes, be a Liverpool legend, Champions League winner, league winner, the first to do it in 30 years. Like, that's really great to be able to do that. And to have that thing, because obviously there aren't that many players that get to call themselves Premier League winners for Liverpool, but he will always be on the list. So do we need a little bit less emotion from the people making the decisions? Yes, but the rest of us can be full of emotion, and I think we will be on the last day of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I probably need to get more ruthless with Anfield hosts and presenters, to be honest with you. But, you know, I'm sentimental as it comes.
I assume that's why Neil's away. He's been put on gardening leave.
A lot of people in the comments saying as well how much they'd like him to be part of the setup moving forward, whether that's kind of a coaching capacity or whatever it is. And that kind of speaks to the fact that he is seen from the fans as someone who really just can teach younger players so much. And whether it's like the random languages that he speaks, I know he speaks Spanish, he probably can do a few others as well in just chatting with the new players coming. Like whenever someone new comes, he seems to be the one that really takes people under their wing. So I'd like to see him as part of the coaching setup in the future, but I don't think he needs to stay until that happens. Like I think it's fine for him to go elsewhere, play a bit of football for another year if that's what he wants, and then he can come back in a couple of years and join us again.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be sort of the ideal one, Mike. But is it interesting to you that both him and Bobby, you know, it was the player's decision to leave? I don't know how far along they got with an offer for either of them. But, you know, when you speak to, well, when you hear from Jürgen Klopp, you know, the suggestion is that, you know, there were offers or at least suggestions of offers for them to stay. But it's them who've decided. I don't know whether that's, you know, partly sort of, you know, being a bit kind, you know, to the players, allowing it to be sort of on their terms, whether it's kind of a, you know, one of those where they're allowing the players or whether there were offers, but they were a bit like, we sort of do want you to go. You can stay if you want, but it's £10 a week and a grand if you play, probably a little bit more than that. But you know what I mean? Or do you think, you know, the club on both instances, you know, might be a bit gutted and there's, you know, why do you think they're going, basically?
I think the club would have offered them like significantly reduced terms. So Milner would have been, it would have been made clear to Milner, but look, we're signing some midfielders this summer. I'm sure Milner's aware of that. Your minutes are going to be even more reduced, but we'd love you to stay for another year and potentially might have offered him a coaching role straight after his contract ends. And maybe Milner's thinking, look, I can probably still play a lot more football than you're going to offer me in this new contract. I would rather go somewhere else for the last years of my career. And maybe if it opens up itself at that point, I can come back and coach. So I think Firmino probably similar position where he would have known off if he took a contract offer from the club going into the next season, he would have been the sixth attacker. Yeah. So I don't think he's comfortable with that at this stage of his career either. So I think the club have obviously made it clear to both players that, hey, these are the offers on the table for you and this is where you're going to be moving forward. And I think the players have decided, look, I want to kind of move on. And I think it's probably for the best for all involved. I think for Firmino, he's 31. He could probably have a lovely time in Italy. And Milner could, I'm sure, have a lovely time at Brighton playing some fluid football. I mean, they were brilliant last night, I thought, and I can imagine Milner playing an important role for that club in the same way Danny Welbeck has, the same way Adam Lallana has. So, yeah, all the best to both of them. I guess we do need to be ruthless this summer. And look, as much as I love Firmino, I adore Firmino and Milner and you know, so many of these players have won us so much, won us everything. There is a point to which we have to say goodbye. And that can be tough. And I'm like you, John. I love these players. Like, I get a bit emotional sometimes. But, you know, we want to win trophies at the same time. And we want to build a squad that can get 90 points in the league and can hopefully, if the big four comes off, we can, you know, be playing Champions League football as well. So we want to be, you know, competing. And part of that will involve making big decisions this summer.
More on the final four in part four. I am now obsessed with trying to make a TV program where having a lovely time in Italy with Bobby Firmino is the source of title. I think I'd be a fantastic host of that. Although Adam, you've got the hats. You've got a better clothes to have a lovely time with Bobby Firmino in Italy. So maybe you should do it.
But well, I do suit hats and sunglasses. They're and sort boats. Of the two things that suit me.
You're hired.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, to be honest, I think most bald people suit hats. They just haven't got the head to cover.
It just raises them up a couple of points. You know, just to sort of finish off, Harry, on Milner, on part one of part one. Someone mentioned before that, I think it was Adam actually talking about the Milner role, and I feel like, you know, it is testament to him in a way, and I'm sure he doesn't want it. A bit like David Fairclough doesn't want to be super sub, but then sort of later embraced it. I'm sure part of the reason he's leaving is that he quite liked the Milner role to be starting in central midfield and would like a bit of that. But I do feel like in 30 years' time, a bit like with David Fairclough, you know, you're still talking about super sub, someone will come on to kick someone and I'll be like, he's coming on to do the Milner role. He's defined that so much.
Yeah, but also imagine being in the Premier League for 20 plus years and still being like, I need to be playing week in, week out. Like the level of kind of, I don't know.
I'd be scaling back.
I'd be happy scaling back. I'd be happy playing a bit of our role. But that's just not the kind of character he is it? And that, I think we really need to reflect on the words that Klopp said in the press conference. Like everything that Liverpool have achieved, in part, they do put down to James Milner. And that is just a ridiculous statement because they have achieved so much in Jurgen Klopp's time. And yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because there's been games this season even that he's come on to see out games. He's just gone to the corner flag when everyone else seems to still want to be trying to score a goal, and we've got 2 minutes left and it's a 1-0 lead we're clinging on to. The Man City game is the one that will really stick out to me from this season, where he just does an exemplary job at basically dealing with players that should be on paper way faster than him and have way more youth on their side than him, and he just manages to deal with everything so well. But yeah, I think it's a fair comment. But he wants to still be playing regular football. He still feels like he's fit enough and well enough to do that. He keeps himself in peak physical shape, doesn't he, to be able to play football every week. So if he feels he's going to get that at Brighton, if he feels he wants to be back with Lallana, a really good manager, really exciting team to be a part of, why not? And yeah, he might just want a few years by the seaside as well. It's a lovely place to live, isn't it? But I think, like you mentioned, people will be defined by that role coming in. Like we talk about Firmino as well, like, oh, they're being Firmino-esque, even when Arden to an extent, oh, they're being kind of that role. James Milner's role has kind of been defined by him, and whoever has to step up and fill that in the seasons to come, it's not an easy one, is it?
No, it isn't indeed. But obviously, we wish James Milner the best. Hopefully, he comes on at the weekend and gets a fantastic ovation. I'm sure that will happen. And then someone pointed out before that at least we know these players are leaving, so you can enjoy them while they're here. It's also a similar thing to Bobby. Obviously, Bobby's been injured, but you'd love to see Bobby and James Milner available, you know, in the squad and as part of the action, certainly in that last game against Aston Villa. It could be, you know, a really, really special afternoon, but hopefully still plenty to play for. But more on that in part four. Okay, the King, there is a coronation going on in London. They love it. They love the pageantry. They love the pomp and circumstance. They love spending money because they've got loads. Adam Smith, the Premier League gave Liverpool a bit of a hospital pass, I think it is fair to say, rather than just saying everyone's doing this. They strongly recommended the clubs. Liverpool are suggesting that they were in a difficult position, a no-win one, if you like. They've sided on the idea of playing the national anthem. Do you think that is the correct decision?
No. I think Liverpool have made it into a hospital pass, if I'm being totally honest with you. I've had, you know, some people disagree with me on Twitter, totally fair, they're wrong, but, you know, these things happen. But I think, like, the Premier League has strongly recommended that they do it. So they're not saying you have to do it. Liverpool know full well that the desire of the fans is for it not to be played. And so what's essentially happened is the club has gone, we can either side with the fans or we can side with the Premier League. And they've chosen to side with the Premier League. They've thrown the fans under the bus because they know what's going to come. And the absence of something is not a story. The presence of something is. So if they hadn't played the anthem, it's very difficult for newspapers to make that a thing, I think, because, like, not doing something, it's very difficult to make it something. You can't talk over me, Harry, you're on mute.
I muted myself, but I was saying, I don't think it is. I think if Liverpool don't play it, that becomes the story.
Of,
like,
course
I think
it does,
the absence of it does still create
a
story.
Harder story to tell, is what I'm saying. The absence of something is a harder story to tell because you can't go, here's the videos of it happening. Yeah. The presence of something is an easier story to tell, and it's definitely an easier story to tell when the story is effectively Liverpool bad, look at the boos, right? That's really easy. There's going to be loads of videos, loads of social media stuff, clicks are plenty for journalists to put up of Liverpool fans booing, which they have done for decades. It is not a new thing. It's not a surprise. It's going to happen. So what the club have done, in my opinion, is said, we're going to side with the Premier League, who would prefer us to play the national anthem, than the fans, who would overwhelmingly prefer us not to. And that's just, for me, that's a mistake that throws fans under the bus. And I think it's a really shitty thing to do. And I don't think the national anthem has any place being played at Anfield or in Liverpool in general. So that it's something I feel very strongly about, I have to say. I think it's really, look, obviously the big baddie here is the Premier League. I don't know why they're sticking the beak in. Tottenham are quite happy putting up a big screen outside their stadium to do all that. So clubs can do weird shit like that if they want to. The Premier League did not need to get involved in any way, shape or form, but to basically, you know, as you say, to sort of go, oh, you really should do this. You know, I mean, we're not telling you have to, but I mean, you probably should, shouldn't you? That's weird. Just why? Stay out of it and go and approve murderous nations to take over football clubs instead. If you want to get involved in politics, do shit like that. I've just got no time for it.
I think, Harry, it it always a little bit tougher than we sort of, you know, painted as, because we're supporters and listen, we should see this. And I don't disagree with a lot of what Adam said there, to be honest with you. I think I feel like, you know, it's the club don't want to look bad, so they're like, well, we'll push it onto the fans and see sort of there you go. And obviously, listen, you know, whatever the fans do to sort of reflect on the club and sort of things like that. But the more I think about it, like, the more that I sort of get the arm in a tricky position on it all, really, both in terms of, you know, the people that they have to deal with on a day to day and week by week basis. That's the Premier League, that's other clubs, you know, and stuff like that, really. And, you know, they do need to have sort of working relationships and things like that. And also a little bit Jordan Henderson, like he's England, sort of England captain now. I mean, Harry Kane's not really. And so it's sort of de facto sort of Jordan Henderson. And he's someone who is clearly very proud to play for his country, is clearly patriotic and I would imagine we'll sing along, you know, at the weekend. And so, although in a way sort of playing, it's putting him in a difficult position. I think if he didn't, it'd be something he would ask about. And it has just become this thing that I just end up thinking, like, why is it something that we have to get involved with the football? Like, I just end up in the position of, why can't all this just go away?
I think it's difficult in the context of basically the social media generation, where you're forced to have an opinion that is either black or is either white. And if you sit somewhere in the middle and you're like understanding where the club are coming from, but you're also understanding where the fans are coming from, and then it becomes a really difficult situation, then no one, it's difficult basically, isn't it? Like, I get what you're saying, John, in terms of sometimes we forget that Liverpool is just run as a business in so many ways, and they have to deal with all the different stakeholder groups on a daily basis. And one of those is the Premier League, and one of those is, you know, all the different groups they're dealing with. And for them, they're like, this is just easier if we just do it like every other club is. I'm going to presume most other clubs are doing this at the weekend.
Yeah, so everyone's doing it.
Everyone's doing it. So then they're like, well, we don't want to be the one. Because for them, they'll be like, well, we're going to attract attention either way. We're going to be the one club in the Premier League that doesn't do it, or we're going to be the club that does it, but it's going to get an awful reaction. But there is an element, like Adam says as well, of the fans needing to be kind of protected, and it needing to be a thing where the media don't have basically just open arms to slay everyone and slay every single Liverpool fan. But ultimately, we know what the reaction is going to be. I feel like it's just going to happen. We're going to have to deal with it, and then we're going to have to move past it. It's happened before. It's not going to be the first time. It's definitely not going to be the last time. Would most fans opt for the national anthem when you play it? Absolutely not. Is it going to happen? It looks like it. So we're just going to have to deal with the consequences, and it's a bit shit.
What I would say, though, is, Mike, is that civil disobedience is getting tougher and tougher these days. Apparently any protests around all this carry on in London is being quashed. You're not allowed to go anywhere near the king and say anything nasty about him or his family at the moment. And so arguably, the one place that you can say your opinion and say what you feel about all this is Anfield on Saturday afternoon. And that's a positive thing, I guess. You know what I mean? Civil disobedience, I think, is a good thing. I think it is good to speak up against things. And I might have a little go, 5:25 on Saturday, Mike, if I'm out the pub.
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting. I'm going to be at Anfield on Saturday as well. And let's see what happens. I mean, obviously, we know where we are as a fan base with the Royal Family, where we are as a city as well, City of Liverpool with the Royal Family and understandably so with the establishment in general. So I guess a lot of this speaks to why we as a nation have become so obsessed with contrived forms of adulation. So it's like, you must do this because of this occasion. And I think it should ultimately just been up to each individual club, based on their values as a club, based on the ownership, based on the manager, maybe, I don't know, but based on that club, they make a decision they want to play the national anthem to mark for coronation. They can do that. The Premier League shouldn't be imposing on clubs that you're advised to do this. It just feels incredibly sycophantic. And I feel like, as a nation, that's something that's inherent in how we operate with the Royal Family. Like, this kind of, you must worship them. They are these people who rule over you in some ways. And, you know, they deserve your adulation. And actually, you know, if you are anti-monarchy, that's fine. If you're pro-monarchy as well, that's, you know, that's up to you, whatever. But we shouldn't be forced to worship or to praise or to honour the Royal Family. Everyone has differing views on that. I just think it's really weird what it's being imposed on us. And I do think Adam has a point that, look, you know, the club have, you know, put this on the fans. So they know the fans are going to give it a particular reception. We know it's going to make headlines, and we know that ultimately they can say, hey, we played it. You know, we played it. We did our role. You know, we honoured the royal family. But at the same time, I do take Harriet's point that if they didn't play it, I guess the club would be under a lot of criticism. So it's a difficult one for the club, I guess. You know, do we throw it on the fans? Do we kind of take the blame ourselves? They probably should have taken it on themselves and just, you know, not played it and just avoided the headlines. But it is what it is. You know, it's going to happen. You know, it's going to be booed. You know, that's inevitable. It's booed at Wembley whenever we go to Wembley. It's going to be booed at Anfield. So that's where we are. But I think a lot of this is just about where we are as a nation. We just seem to impose these forms of adulation when it comes to the royal family. And it's just a bit weird.
So many amazing words there. Wow, Mike. I didn't understand half of them, but I was I loved it.
He's a smart guy. Smart guy,
he's
Mike.
Such a smart guy.
Just to finish off, Adam, it's you'll over the next 24 hours, I would imagine I will hear an amount or number of people telling me / us, listen, if it's not for you, just stay quiet or whatever. But what pisses me off about all that is that's also like a form of like subservience.
Compliance.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, I completely agree what Mike said. You know, we're forcing this sort of, you know, kind of compliance sort of onto people. You will sing God Save the King. But if you don't want to, look, just shut up or stay down, stay out the way. Do you know what I mean? But I feel like almost, no, well, you're still doing it. Do you know what I mean? That thing, do you know what I mean? Whether you're sort of singing it or not, you're still saying, this is how you have to act. And it's still, I just end up wanting to scream, really, because I'm like, no, yous are mad. Like, the sensible position is to not want to do this. And I feel like history will judge us kindly on this. When civilization, Adam, is studied, I mean, I don't think they'll spend loads of time on this. But when they do, they'll be like, no, the Scousers were right. You know, that's fucking weird.
Yeah, it is fucking weird. And, to be honest, it's offensive. I honestly think it's offensive. Like, the country as a whole is spending hundreds of millions of pounds for this coronation. There will be a car that will drive a crown covered in diamonds from one palace to another palace to be put on somebody's head because of the nature of their birth at a time when the most stolen things from shops are nappies and baby food. We are, and meanwhile, the monarchy has sorted itself out to mean that they will pay no inheritance on the money that has moved from the Queen to Charles, all by virtue of the fact they were born into the right family. Well, I'm sorry, but you can go fuck yourselves, because there are a lot of people that won't be able to feed their families at this time because of what's been going on. And you're spending money on this and then having a go at us because we won't say, God save the Queen, God save the King, long to reign over us. I don't want to be reigned over, thank you very much. I'm all right on my own. You're useless. You're a waste of time. And I cannot believe that we're going to be the ones that are criticised, you absolute lunatics. That's my stance.
There's a nice new kit, Harriet. It's it's red. It's really red. It's one of the reddest ones, I feel. I really like it. I think they're going to win loads in it.
Adam Smith wants to be a strong, independent man. Just let him be a strong, independent man.
Throw your hands up at me. That's what Adam Smith's saying. As long as his missus doesn't hear.
I love the new kit. I'm all in on it. It's a kit that you're just going to win loads in. And I hope Liverpool are good enough next season to win loads again, because that kit absolutely deserves it. Complete creds, by the way, to whoever was doing the creative direction on all of the shoots. And I know I sound like a proper like media company person right now, but the small touches in it were so cool, down to like the LFC coin going in the photo booth machine. Like, I just loved it. Thought it was so well thought out, so cool. Loving them all in their like trousers. I wonder if they're their own. You know, we need like breakdown on the shoot where it says like trousers model's own, because I want to know if Robertson's trousers are his, like, because he bought them for the shoot. What is going on? What's happening? But no, most see that the kit is really red, really cool. Loving some of the 70s music they're putting over it as well. Yeah, 10 out of 10 from me.
Yeah. Text in if you know where Andy Robertson got his kicks from. it is sort of very important. It's too dear, Mike. They're all too dear. They keep going up, which is a little bit of a shame. You know, people who are trying to figure out how, you know, how much it's going to cost them for the kids and stuff like that. I know it is tough, but as a football kit to watch footballers in, it looks a really nice one.
Yeah, it's definitely expensive, and you know, it's a shame. It might be the first kit I buy in a long time because it's just, it's an absolute belter, that kit. Like, it's just everything I want from a kit. I don't like over sophistication in a kit. I just like red, maybe a bit of white on it, and just the LFC badge, and I'm good to go. And this kit ticks all those boxes, right? And yeah, it's got a retro feel, as this comment says here. It's just, it feels like a league winning kit, and it feels like a kit that deserves to grace the Champions League. So hopefully, if the big four goes well, and I'm doing this on Neil's behalf at the moment, as he's in NYC. But hopefully the big four goes well and we can, you know, wear this in the Champions League, because that kit is just, it's glorious. That's the European final kit.
It will also look great in Dublin, where the Europa League final is, Mike.
Yeah, you never know. You never know.
It'll look great everywhere. I'll take it. like Adam Smith itself, stuff like that doesn't go out of fashion. We're going to wear it on the last day of the season, which I don't really approve of, Adam. I feel like, you know, there's a gap, and then you wear next season's kit. It feels like a thing, you know, to sell kits. This is why I'm not very good at capitalism. I'm like, no, I'm against that. Why are you trying to sell more? But then it does make me happy that Bobby Firmino is going to get to wear it once, because he'll look great.
Yeah. And I think if we're all honest, we could do with just putting this season to bed as soon as possible. So if we can start the next one earlier than planned, that's sort of fine. If we just go, do you know what, it's already next season, don't worry about it. And yeah, look, all of the above, it looks amazing, it looks great. It's definitely a league winning kit. It's definitely too expensive, but I'm never going to buy it, so what do I care? I think it's a lovely one that we're going to be able to watch them play in, hopefully watch them win a lot in. And it's just got a really lovely retro feel to everything. It's sort of mostly 70s, 80s, but also that random one from the 90s that I think Robbie Fowler was particularly good in, if memory serves. I'm behind it. I'm as long as the away kit isn't the mad colours that the disco one is that we've been really shit in this season. That's the key thing we need to find out about now.
Yeah, next job, get an away kit, we're not shitting. That is the next job for the people at Nike. We'll leave that with you. And we'll leave part one with you. If you are listening live, you're going to jump straight in with no gap whatsoever. If you're listening to this as a podcast, you are going to get a couple of inserts I mentioned before. Jay Coleman, Dan Sanderson, talking about what they are up to. And then we'll be back after that. And it is John Gibbons for Tour Live, and I'm joined in the studio by Jay Coleman, who is from LFQ, or LF Quiz. It is a quiz app you play on your phone, but also they do fantastic quiz nights here in the city, and we're going to talk about both. But first of all, thanks for coming in, mate. Appreciate it.
Nice one, no problem. Good to be here.
So tell us about the app, first of all, because it's a quiz app you play on your phone. So what was your inspiration for doing it, and how's it gone?
Well, it all started in lockdown, really. Probably like a lot of people. I lost my job. Kind of didn't have any idea how long I was going to be out of work and things like that. And obviously my routine got completely threw out the window. Couldn't go to the gym, couldn't go to the match, couldn't go down the pub. Just waking up, only so many series you can watch on Netflix and Premier League years. I think once I'd completed that, I was just obviously Zoom quizzes were kind of becoming a bit of a thing. So the first one didn't actually go too well. I put it in my WhatsApp group with the lads who go to the match and said, look, seeing a few quizzes are going on here, why don't I put one together and we'll see how we get on? Few lads agreed to it. And then I think I just went in the garden, had a couple of drinks and ended up having a bit of a kip. And then next thing, my phone's pinging, WhatsApp call. And I didn't have nothing prepared or anything. And let's just say the call lasted about 2 minutes. I got a few questions off the top of my head. Didn't even quite know the answers, and it was just a disaster. But I thought, no, I'll prepare properly next time. Done about 4 or 5 over lockdown with my mates. They were getting bigger and bigger. My dad and my brother, they were obviously based in Yorkshire over the lockdown, so it was a good way to keep in touch with them. And I just got some really good feedback from it and really enjoyed doing it. Obviously, then lockdown, you come out of it. I got a new job. People weren't as much on Zoom because you can go out the house and stuff. But I was just doing my training for my job, working for like some complaints company. And I thought, I don't really want to be doing this. Don't fancy doing this. And I was just sat there like thinking of Liverpool-based questions and stuff. And just come to me, maybe do an app. See if there's anything out there, and there wasn't. And then what happened then? I left my job, didn't work for about 12 to 18 months. Basically locked myself in my box room and just thought of, I think at the moment there's probably about 8,000 questions on the app. Anything from the Shankly area up until now, any players you can think of, there's probably going to be content in there, whether it's Bruno Cheyrou, Salif Diao, Neil Vudzich, you know, anything on there. And yeah, it's doing okay. Get a lot of good feedback about the app. Each match day, there's match day quizzes on there. There's like a little score predictor, squad predictor, leaderboards, the ability to challenge your friends. And I'm hoping next season there'll be a lot more features on there that you can enjoy yourself with.
I mean, yeah, it's fantastic. So if people, you've got a website, it's lfquiz.com, but it's available, you know, on the App Store, on Google Play, whatever phone you've got, you can download it completely free and get stuck in and see how you get on.
Yeah, completely free. Obviously, I know some apps, like everyone thinks there's a catch, it's completely free at the minute. There's no like pop-up adverts and things like that. And yeah, you know, getting some really good feedback on it. It's been a long haul. It's just me who's doing it. I haven't got like anyone else, you know, funding it, or you know, I haven't got this big fancy office or anything like that. It's still me in my box room, you know, thinking of questions each week and adding content to the Instagram page and things like that. And yeah, it's going okay. Obviously, hoping things like this will get it in a lot more eyes and ears. That's probably the biggest thing I'm struggling with at the moment, is how do I actually get that in front of people's faces. But the faces I'm getting them in front of, I'm getting some really good feedback.
Yeah, that's fantastic. We'd encourage everyone to download it. Everyone loves, you know, to test the Liverpool knowledge, and the fact there's a leaderboard and things like that means you can see how you're getting on against others. You mentioned there you're in the box room coming up with all the questions and stuff. Is there anything, you know, from doing research and stuff that surprised you or you thought, I never would have guessed that myself?
I mean, obviously doing a lot of it over lockdown, it was nice for me personally, because, you know, I've grew up with stories from my granddad and my dad about how we were conquering Europe and winning leagues like it was going out of fashion. So it was nice to have a little bit of a delve into that and kind of relive the moments that I've kind of got from when I've started first watching the game and obviously starting to go myself. So, you know, Ian Callaghan, for a start, he's obviously the club's record appearance holder, 857 appearances. He started 850 of them.
Wow.
So eight out of his 857 appearances, he started in 850 of those games, which is just ridiculous. And even crazier, he got one yellow card. That was it. Like, never got sent off. I know back them days, you're obviously, you know, you look at,
it was a bit more lenient.
You look at the videos of Ian St. John and things like that, and obviously on the cards as well, Graham Souness never got sent off for Liverpool.
Wow.
And from obviously me, I'm 30, so I grew up with stories of how good he was and how hard of a tackler he was, and you heard about the stories of when he was in like Bucharest and like half the city was out trying to, you know, attack him because he, you know, I think he hit someone in the jaw. He never got sent off for Liverpool, never. And that is probably one that sticks into my head. And then you look at the Istanbul season, and I was 13 at the time, so at that point I'm like addicted, trying to watch them when I can and trying to go to games when I can. But, you know, how did we win the Champions League that year? You know, we finished fifth, Everton finished above us.
Yeah.
We finished above Bolton on goal difference. Milan Baras was our top goal scorer in the Premier League with 9 goals. And Gerrard, Barros and Garcia were our top goal scorers that season with 13. I mean, and yesterday was the 18th anniversary of when we beat Juventus at home.
That's right.
And you look at the starting lineup from that day, Carson, Letalich, Biscan, Traore. I know a few of them are cult heroes, but you look at the team we were up against, it was littered with European Superstars, Cup and Ballon d'Or winners. And then obviously the final. So, you know, that really hit me. When you sit there and think about it, I mean, as a fan and just with life in general, you're just so busy and going to the games now, and it's not often you get a chance to actually like sit back and think, look, focus on a season. You know, we haven't all got the time, and probably not all aren't as sad as me, you know, sitting there, but it just absolutely baffles me how we won it. And then I think what doing all the content's done and having like a proper like delve into it is how good we've actually been under Klopp. Like, you know, some of the records and some of the stats that we've kind of pulled off now, kind of become a bit spoiled.
Yeah.
And I think everyone just becomes like accustomed of it. I know everyone's sick and tired of like the 90 points three times in a season. But I think the best team I'd seen in my lifetime was probably the one under Rafa. Alonso, Mascherano, Gerrard, Torres. And I think the highest we got that season was like 86.
Yep.
And, you know, I thought we were like amazing that season. You know, Salah scored 20 plus goals four out of the six seasons he's been at us. That's just in the Premier League. And, you know, that's only been done by Suarez twice, who was just a freak. Torres only done it once. And Fowler only done it once in a 38-game season.
That right?
So, like, Michael Owen never scored over 20 goals in the Premier League in a season for us. The year he won the Ballon d'Or, he scored 16 goals in the league, you know, and 24 in total. Like, Salah's first season, he scored more than that in just the Premier League. And then you look at, like, Trent and Robbo, like, they've got more assists than most our fullbacks, previous fullbacks, especially the Premier League era combined. You look at the likes of Steve Finnan, you've got, like, three times more as him, and I actually think he was a really good player.
Yeah.
You know, a lot more than Reece, Johnson, Gian Enrique. So it just obviously, again, just having that time to kind of sit there and, like, soak it all in. How actually good we've been under Klopp is just, you know, I know this season hasn't been great, and I think a lot of people are just writing this season off probably because of how good we've been, and some of the stats and the info you find in under Klopp, it's just like something the club's never seen before. And that's when we were like winning European Cups like they were going out of fashion.
Yeah, no, it is yeah, definitely a great point. You talk about Istanbul there, and leads me on to an event you're doing, which is on the anniversary. It's on Thursday, 25th of May, starts at 7 o'clock in the Shankly Hotel. Tickets are £5, and it's a Miracle of Istanbul special. So you do an interactive quiz, and that's what it is, isn't it? You know, on the night, it's interactive, it's entertaining, and this one in particular is a celebration of that miraculous Istanbul season and night.
Yeah, so I think this will be the sixth quiz night I've done in the city. The first couple were about 30, 40 people there. The last one I've done was the weekend of the Man United game, so I might have been a good luck. Oh man, I don't know. But there was over 100 people there that night. Really good night. I think a lot of people, you know, probably relate quizzes and quiz nights, you know, down at your local pub. There's an old fella or old woman at the bar, you know, having a pint with a microphone, and it's just question one, and it's the same all the way up to 50. But these quiz nights that I've been doing, like, it's a bit like a question of sport. You know, video rounds are in there. You know, like I say, it's interactive. It's all, like, on the telly or on, like, a projector screen. Like blankety blank, you know, stuff like that against the clock. Wide variant of questions. And yet again, just getting some really good feedback on that. And I think this night, again, with day, we saying like it's not often we just get a chance to sit there and, you know, talk about our memories of seasons and games. And I'm really looking forward to the Istanbul. And I'm going to have the highlights of the matches on in the interval. One of the rounds is going to be solely based on Istanbul and the season. Another round will be based on this season, the good and bad of it. And then I've obviously got to keep on a couple of the other bits to myself.
But of course.
No, obviously encourage anyone to come down. You don't need to know like the ins and outs of the history of the club. It's just a really good night to just sit there with your friends and family or your mates and just have a drink and just have a gab, and just an all-round way of just reminiscing about, you know, the times you've had following the club.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to know more, it's at _LFquiz on Twitter. They're on Instagram as well. And also, I mentioned that web address before. Would encourage people to download the app, get involved, but also to get down to the Shankly on the anniversary. Like you said, it's a chance to maybe get together with your mates who you watched it with, or you travelled with, or... And just talk about, you know, the amazing evening and celebrate it early, because we'll probably never see anything like it again.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, unfortunately, I wasn't there, so I watched it at home with my family. I was 12 at the time. But one of the biggest memories for me is it was the first time and the only time I've ever swore at my nan. you know, we were 3-0 down at half-time, and I was in the living room having a bit of a soak on my own. And I always remember my nan, she come in, and basically just said, she looks like a genius now, but she, you know, her attitude was, well, you know, they scored 3-1 half, why can't we? And obviously I won't tell you what I said under my breath, but, you know, straight away it's brought back memories for me that I'll always remember. Yeah, the great Scouse Nans, aren't they? She wasn't wrong either, and she still tells me to this day, like, you know, well, I knew what I was talking about.
Always believe. Thanks for coming in. Really nice speak to you about it. And best of luck with the app. And then we're going to try and get down and get a nice table one. And stuff like that. But yeah, thanks for coming in, mate.
Yeah, thank you.
And it is John Gibbons for Tour Live and joined in the studio by an old friend of the Anfield Ref, is Dan Sanderson from Monday Arm Mag. So Dan, well, thanks for coming in to see us. Really nice to see you today.
Thanks for having me back. Cheers.
We're to talk about Mundial and the latest edition, but you know, people know Mundial for the range of things. You've had a bit of a break from the magazine, so first of all, you know, why was it you made the decision to bring it back to the masses?
Good question. Yeah, people probably know us for social first.
Read Mundial Mag once.
Exactly. But we also, you know, alongside the memes and reposting of goals, we've, for nearly 10 years now, we've produced a quarterly magazine. So COVID happened is the short answer to your question, and the week that we launched an issue, W.H. Smith upgraded us so that we were like the feature magazine in all of the travel W.H. Smith around the country, and about 3 days later everything shut down, so that was kind of a hard one to take. And then, as with every small business at the time, COVID was about sort of damage limitation and surviving, and the magazine was one of the first things to fall by the wayside. We always had ambitions to bring it back. It was always our pride and joy and the best key into what we do, you know, what we think we do best. Just over a year ago, we were acquired by Football Co, who are kind of a big digital football publisher. And that was first on our list of kind of requirements, was to bring print back. So we're 3 or 4 issues back in. This is our 25th issue. And as I said, next year is our 10th year. So
we are pleasantly surprised how much affection that there remained for it, because, you know, we work in this industry. We know you can be popular, but as soon as you go away, you're replaced with other things. But I noticed, and I'm sure you noticed it even more, how many people were so pleased when it came back. That must have been a really nice feeling.
Yeah, it was great. We kind of kept it quiet for as long as we could about when the first issue back was launching, and we went with Maldini because play the hits. the response was absolutely incredible, and you know, we hadn't done a magazine for quite a long time, almost two years. So to bring it back and to have people buy it straight away, and to see the numbers kind of coming through the site and people, it landed on people's doorsteps, was amazing. And then to follow it with another one, and to follow it with another one, it feels good to be back in the flow of it. That's probably the best feeling, is like back to business.
Well, the newest edition, the one we're here to talk about, is about a group of footballers, I'd say a few levels below Maldini, but maybe not in the heads. Maldini's on a Wednesday night, and it's this idea of, you know, I've watched this, a short film to go alongside it, which I watched before. You very kindly bought me a magazine in, so I'll read that as well. But this idea of a revolution in football that's obviously existed for quite a while, this idea of a group of mates coming together and playing five-a-side and in leagues and stuff like that. But very much since COVID, if you like, there's been a change, and been, you know, technology's got involved, and now lots of people, if you want to find a game of footy on a Tuesday or Wednesday, it's only a couple of clicks away, and this is what this is all about.
Yeah, for sure. It's the football we play, to be honest. We've, as anyone who's familiar with the magazine knows, we've done icons, we've done kind of legends of the game, we've done modern icons, we've done fashionable footballers, and we've always covered grassroots, but we've always steered towards Sunday League, maybe because there's a bit more history and a bit more romance around that. And then we just kind of shook ourselves ahead of this, and we're like, what about the fact that on a Tuesday night you're playing in this game, Dan, or James, you're playing Wednesday night? And we sort of turned the lens back on ourselves and focused on, what football do we play? And it's midweek football, it's after work, it's completely for the love of the game. So we went and found some interesting stories from around the UK in some iconic places like the Pits and the Westway in London, of people who were just coming together, and they might not know each other, and they're from all different nationalities and from all different backgrounds, and they might have met through an app, or they might have met on social, or they might have kind of come together in the pub just to play football because they love it. And it was as interesting and as rich and as full of life as the
issue we did about Maradona in Naples. It matters as much to people as the Scudetto or the Premier League does.
Yeah, it's the app stuff that really sort of interested me. And I remember the first time I come across it, I was playing down at Jericho, and so we were waiting to start. So some lad on the next pitch, like, recognised me from what we do, and you know, he said, oh, to be honest, I don't know any of these lads. Do you know what I mean? I just, like, I've joined this thing, and it says where the game is. And he said, it's Boss. He'd moved to the city, didn't really know anyone, but wanted to play footy, but also make mates. And he was like, I've got both through this. And that's what you found as well. It's the game of footy, but also the bonds that people get, you know, through five-a-side that have gone on to, well, launch businesses and all sorts.
Yeah, I think if you end up watching the film and you read the story, that's what comes across, is there's a community being built. It's not about skill level. There's some great footballers in there. There's some great footballers in the film. There's some really bad footballers as well. But it's kind of about building a new friendship group, or just having something after work if you have moved to a new city. That's what the crux of the story is. The app, like the one that they use, Footy Addicts, it's incredible. And we met the guy who founded it a few years ago. We played at Wolves. We were very fortunate to get a game at Molyneux, and he was on the other side, and he absolutely destroyed us in midfield. And he had red hair, and he was a Scouser, so I was already intrigued. I was like, who's this? And then he told us he did Footy Addicts, and we've kind of had it on the back burner for a while, and then it just fell in our lap for this one. It felt like it was time to focus on that community.
We talk a lot about the power of football, and we talk about it, the Anfield app, and people who love the game talk about it, but it's often from a point of view of watching, really. So we talk about the fact that, well, you know, I'm a Liverpool fan, and that the times I've had, the people I've met through supporting Liverpool and following it, but this is completely different in a way. This is through sort of playing together and the bonds you get from that, and it's just as well, you've proved in the addition here, it is just as sort of powerful, really. And although there is something about the people you play with, the only people who I still speak to from university, from my football team. And, like, I had some good mates on my course and stuff like that, but for whatever reason, there's three lads who I played for, Politics FC, who I still keep in touch with. And I don't think doesn't feel like a coincidence.
No, I don't think it is. I think, it's similar to going to match in a way, isn't it? In that, like, it can be several hours, you're going through a lot with each other, and it normally ends up in the pub after. So, like, there are similarities, and I think you learn a lot about people when they're kind of leveled off by playing football. I think it brings out certain people's egos, it levels off certain people, it calms certain people down, it shows true character, and I think that's where you pick out your friends, similar to going to watch Liverpool, I suppose.
Yeah. So the addition, if people want to get it, you know, go buy it, basically. Yeah. Where's the best place to get it?
Yeah, please do. It's mundialmag.com, and if we're back up and running, you can subscribe. You can get 4 magazines a year. You get all sorts of fringe benefits with it now, and discounts for our favourite brands and stuff like that. So that's the cheapest and best way to get it to your door. And there's plenty of these left, and then we have another one launching in summer, which will be similarly on a theme.
Is there any possibility to get sort of past ones as well, or are they all gone now?
Pass. They've gone. we've got a few hanging around. We always do a bit of an audit, and every now and again we'll do a bit of a sale, but you've got to act quickly, really.
Generally speaking, you're best getting on board now, and then you won't be sort of disappointed in the future when you look up. And in terms of, you know, the future for you guys, because, you know, like you say, sort of COVID hit you and stuff like that, but have you got, you know, plans of things you'd like to do in the future, is stories and of things you'd like to get involved with? I know you were in Austin recently, which looked pretty cool.
Yeah, that was great. We went out to South by Southwest, and we were hosted by Austin FC, and we had a great weekend there, and we kind of had a chat to MLS about the emerging fan culture there, which is something we think we're quite good at talking about, and they agreed. I'd recommend Austin to anyone, whether you're working there or not. but yeah, for the future, so that community, I was talking about that sort of Club Mundial thing. If you become a subscriber, you go into that community, and we're going to create content for you, and we're going to create more audio, more video, and try and build back up to where we were pre-COVID, essentially. But if you're a subscriber, you get more of it, and it's better. We'll always do free stuff. We'll always put stuff out on social, because that's where we get people in. But predominantly where you're going to get the good stuff is at Club Mundial now.
You mentioned the MLS, and it's fascinating to me, especially the newer clubs, because it's almost like a blank page, isn't it? and it's quite exciting in a way, and I'm sure it's daunting for sort of some people who wanted to start something. But I think, you know, with our, we're both Liverpool supporters, and I feel very lucky to support a club with such a rich culture, and you know, you learn from the elder fellas and women and stuff like that, and it gets sort of passed down for you. This idea, I know Austin's quite a new club, isn't it? Idea that if we can just build something from scratch here, it must be quite liberating for them and exciting.
I think it is, and I think they've made, you know, the older MLS clubs aren't old, early 90s, but they've made them look archaic in how they interact with their fans and how they create content and how they put stuff out because of that blank page thing. I think they all come from really vibrant communities. I think Austin has lent well into the sort of Latin American feel of that city and built a football club out of it, and it shows. They've done it with authenticity. I'm sure we'll see some in the next few years that aren't done in the same way, but that blank slate kind of wiped away all the sins that previous MLS clubs have maybe committed on failed attempts for it to stick in America, and just they've come at it with real, like, authenticity and excitement.
Well, I'm sure I'll be reading all about it soon. But huge thanks for coming in. Best of luck with it, or with this edition, with the future. I made up his back. It's absolutely brilliant. And yeah, thanks for coming down.
Thanks very much. Cheers, John.
And we are back, podcast people. I hope you love those inserts. Thanks a lot to both of them for coming in to see us. Best of luck with the event. To Jay, do try and get down there. Will you give me a quiz question? And he said, does Jürgen Klopp's not won a free grounds? So as Liverpool manager, there's three Premier League grounds that Jürgen Klopp's not won at. Do you want to have a little think and I'll get the other side? It was hard. I didn't get any of them, to be honest with you. Havitt's got a hand up, which is very polite.
Well, this season, they haven't won at Forest, have they? Forest has won.
Good shout.
Do you not know the answer?
No, I've just realised. I thought he'd WhatsApp them to me, but he said them before. I think it was Forest. Oh, this is a shambles.
That must be one of them.
There we are. And it's good thinking. I'm really sorry about this, Jay. He messaged me just the question. when we were live. Sorry, Jay. It's been ages since you come in. He's online now. I'll get him to do them. We'll do them at the end. Adam Smith, Brentford. Are we going to beat them?
We haven't
won at Brentford. That's two.
Yeah,
I know the third one.
Do you? Go on.
I think it's Swansea.
I think it is Swansea. There we are. We boxed it. Sorry, Jay. When you go to that quiz, it'll be better than that. Adam Smith, we're playing at Brentford at home. Are we going to win?
Yes. Question mark? I think we are. I do think we are. But I think I think it depends on whether what happened in midweek, which was basically a big bowl of nothing with a penalty in the middle of it, which is I'm totally fine with, whether that was because we're sort of saving ourselves knowing this is the tougher game, or whether it's sort of us running out of steam a little bit. I don't know. My instinct is yes, we're going to win. But I do think they're a very good team, and I think they will maybe be a little bit more on it about how to expose that space down the left-hand side a little bit more than other teams have done. And, you know, we conceded three against Spurs and they're dog shit at the minute. So I think, you know, like Brentford are a team that know how to... And also we got physically bullied, didn't we, against whoever it was before West Ham. Wasn't it? Anyway, they were very much with the long throws.
Forest were good at the throws.
Forest. We got physically bullied by them, and they, and Brentford, I think, are better than that, better at that than Forest. So I don't think it's going to be any kind of walkover. If I was having a bet, I'd maybe say Liverpool to win by one.
Yeah, it's not going to be a walkover, Mike. They've got a manager who's good at looking at the opposition and looking at ways to exploit them. That said, they turned up to Anfield last season when we were struggling a bit and we won 2-0 and it was fairly uneventful. I remember Chamberlain scoring a nice back post one at the Cop, largely because I was in the Cop end. But so they don't, you know, when you think of Brentford, you think of going there and all the problems that they cause you. They don't travel sort of quite as well traditionally, but they still will give us plenty to think about. And like Adam says, you know, they will take some beating at the weekend.
Yeah, they're not the sort of side that get hammered often. I mean, when they do, you're always a bit surprised. And I think it's happened once this season. And it was a bit like, whoa, I think it was Brighton that did them. But yeah, it's going to be a tough game for us. And it, one of those games where the first goal will be really important, where I think if we score the first one, early enough, it would hopefully be comfortable beyond that. It feels like the kind of game you'd want Jota to start, just because Jota is a sort of player that scores the opening goal in the most scruffy circumstances possible, but it's just always relief whenever he scores a goal. So I would love to see him start if he's fit enough, but it looks like he'll be off the bench again, given what the manager said in the press conference. But look, it'll be a tough test for us. We know what Brentford are all about. They're one of the better sides in the division. Since they've come into the division, it's really weird because they feel like such a Premier League club, and it feels like they've been in the Premier League for so long, but it's only been two seasons. So that's a testament to their manager, because they just feel like an established Premier League club, and a club that cause anyone they play, City they beat at the Etihad early this season, Arsenal they've given a few tough games this season as well. So whoever they play, they give, you know, a really good account of themselves, and I expect nothing less on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the comment that you flashed up there, Harry, you're talking about the fact that the firepower they've got, and you backed them to take some of the chances that Fulham missed, and that is the concern to me, is up top, you know, whoever they pick. You know, you imagine it'd be Tony and one other, and it feels like whoever they sort of go for there is a handful. And, you know, you fancy them to, you know, if they do create them chances or they do, you know, get in, then, you know, you back them to take one of the ones that Fulham got during the week.
Yeah, I was just looking at some of their recent results, and we've spoken about how good they've been this season. Recently, they have struggled a little bit more in terms of scoring goals than being clinical. They lost to, I think United was their last game. They lost, they beat Forest and they beat Chelsea. And then before that, they kind of had a run where they were beaten to Wolves. They drew to Villa, lost to Newcastle. So it's one of those where they've been a bit up and down. And I'm wondering now, where are they in the table? I'm doing this all live as we speak.
Very 10th, I think.
Yeah, so they're one of the rare teams in the league at the moment that isn't really playing for that much, in terms of they're obviously going to be in the Premier League next season, but they're probably not going to be thinking about being in the European spots. And I quite enjoy at this stage of the season not playing teams that are in a relegation scrap, but also not playing teams that are right at the top of the table. It was similar to Fulham in that I felt there was a sense that they didn't have like loads to play for. They weren't going completely all out on Wednesday night. So I think it might be a similar game, but they have got that real firepower up front. I think Tony is the one, isn't he really, who can always get something out of nothing. And what we've really struggled against in recent times is teams that can get something out of nothing. We saw it with Tottenham most recently, where they weren't really in the game, and then all of a sudden a couple of counter-attacks later and they're back in it. So that's what we need to be really careful about. But for all the talk of every game and whether we'll change back to the system, I think we're pretty sure that that's not going to happen now. It will still be the same system with Trent in that more hybrid midfield role. And so Konate is going to have to deal with it, is basically what we're going to see. And how we cope with that will be an interesting one. But yeah, they've definitely got talent and a really good manager as well. They're a well-run club. And yeah, like Mike said, they're a team that you kind of can't really tell have only been in the Premier League a few seasons. And we do love Billy as well, who we get on as our caller, opposition caller, but don't want him to leave Anfield too happy.
Well, he's up for the weekend, Billy. He's staying till Monday. Which,
so you're saying it doesn't matter if he's sad or so for a few hours.
Like, there'll be enough going on for him, Billy, yeah, that he's able to enjoy it. In terms of team selection, Adam, anything funky you're going to do?
No, the manager sort of suggested in his press conference that Henderson might not be fit, didn't he? So I think we're going to have to see something different, whether that's maybe he goes with Elliot in midfield after his little sort of cameo towards the end of the game in midweek. But otherwise, I think maybe we'll see Gakpo come back in for Nunez. I think that would be the main one. And I guess because the manager also mentioned about Jota still having a bit of a problem with his back. Yeah. I also do that because that's because I'm fat, not because I've not injured myself in any way. So I think he's probably not. I imagine he'll probably stick with Diaz on the left, Salah on the right, and I think Gakpo will come back in through the middle, and maybe Elliot in for Henderson, perhaps, or maybe Milner. Maybe that's what we'll see. So yeah, little bit of Milner for us all to go, oh yeah, that's what he does. yeah,
or maybe it'll be shite. I don't know.
Oh, and obviously Robertson back at left back as well.
Yeah, Robertson and Gakpo feel the obvious ones for me. Mike, they felt like they were rested, sort of, rather than, I know Robertson wasn't great in the game before that, but it felt like, you know, it was a bit of a rest. So them two to come back in, and then maybe has got a bit of a selection headache in midfield, because, you know, if Henderson isn't right to start, whoever you sort of bring in, you know, there's problems as well as positives.
Yeah, I think he's got a few selection issues in terms of the front three as well, because does he start Diaz for a third game in a row, or does he bring Darwin in, or does he risk Jota for 60 minutes? So that's another one he's going to have to sort out.
Yeah, it's a good shout on Diaz, yeah.
Yeah, so because I don't think Diaz can, I don't think it would be wise to play Diaz three games in a row, starting three games in a row. I think he probably needs this game off the bench and maybe start the other one. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does. In midfield, I'd probably go with something similar to what we saw against Brentford.
Fulham.
Fulham, that was it. Yeah, Fulham. I'll go with something similar to what we saw against Fulham, and I think that should be enough.
That's why I kept saying midweek, Mike, because I couldn't remember it.
Yeah, I was like, who do we play on? Who do we play? It was like ages ago.
There's a big nine, and you know who knows kind of who they are. We just need to keep beating them, Harriet, and there's a bit of an opportunity, it feels, you know, Saturday to put a little bit of scoreboard pressure on. You know, United lost in the end on Thursday to Brighton. It was a late goal, and you know, it just draws them in a little bit more. I mean, they're obviously still massive favourites to sort of get there, but if we can get another win on Saturday night, it just maybe starts creeping a few more doubts into their silly Mancunian heads.
McAllister's just a top red, isn't he? That's what I took away from all of what you just said. It was really funny watching the press conference because Klopp did the maths live out loud. Good. And he was like, okay, so we're on this. So Manchester United would need 8 points and they've got five games. And then he was like, they're going to do that. And he just laughed. But there is that moment of doubt where people are doing the maths again. And that's what I like, because before yesterday, people had stopped doing the maths and we were like, no, it's not happening. It's not realistic. There is a tiny bit of hope, and you go on Twitter after United drop points and you're thinking, could we do it? I know it's not in our hands, obviously, but our job now is just to get as many points from the big, however many there are left as possible. The final four. So get as many as we can from the final four. I was looking at the league table and it's really nice to see the last five all green. That literally hasn't happened all season, and it's so satisfying. It looks so good. I'm almost frustrated that we just couldn't find this form earlier, because it's the same team, and points of season we were thinking, will this team ever win a football game again? Because it just looked like they just lost what they were doing and lost their minds. They found their minds again. They found their form again. Everything is clicking as it should be. They should be able to beat Brentford and put the pressure on United before they play again. I'm not sure who they've got this weekend, United.
West Ham.
So never say never. The hope that kills you.
Have you got the abacus out, Adam?
No, because I don't think we're going to do it, because I just think that United will be just too... they've got too many chances, I think. They can lose again and still be fine. But I've said all the way through that, for me, the key thing is that we win all of our games and that then we're on that run of form going into next season, because the last two times we've done really well in the league, we've ended the previous season really brightly. So that's what I want to see. If we were to lose any game, then obviously I'd like us to lose to Leicester. And then that'll hopefully help send the Blues down. But I would prefer us to beat Leicester, obviously. I'm just saying, if we had to, if one of the big four, the final four, the top four, whatever the hell it's called, if one of them had to go not our way, then the Leicester one, which means win the rest and just ask the questions at the end of it. That's all you can do.
Sensible chat from Adam Swift there, Mike. But listen, we all know if we beat Brentford and West Ham do something, the trousers will be on the head and we'll be, I don't know, counting fingers. I don't know what I'm saying.
You'd definitely be doing the maths for sure. Like, you'd be figuring out how many more points they need to drop for us to overtake them. So we'll all be doing that. But I think if I put my sensible hat on, if I take my dreamer's hat off, I think it's just we've given ourselves a bit too much to do. But it's not all doom and gloom, because I think, to talk to Adam's point, this is about next season's title challenge for me. And we need to get into a place where we have the institutional muscle memory of winning games in a row. And if we can end this season winning those last four games, winning the big four, the final four, if we can win these big four games that are coming up, you know, we're in a position where we've won nine in a row and we can go into next season, hopefully with a muscle memory of what it is to win every single week. And next season is going to be, you know, a challenge City have. Haaland, De Bruyne, all these talented players. We're going up against them again, hopefully. And to do that, we're probably going to have one or two spells in the season where we win 10 or 11 in a row and go on these big winning runs. So end of the season in a positive way. And yeah, we might finish outside the top four, but that's, you know, based on what we did earlier this season. If we end the season strongly, then we can have plenty to hope and dream about in that lovely new kit.
Listen, I hope you've got Final Four fever wherever you are. I hope you enjoy your football action. If you're not subscribed to the Anfield app, it is a great time to do so. We're going to have audio and video reaction to hopefully another Liverpool win streak after the Brentford game from pubs around Anfield. Loads of other stuff on the side. If you enjoyed this preview, there's plenty more of those as well. The team talk on the video service, streets after Ian Klopp's press conference, really getting stuck into everything he said there. The audio that Ian Ryan hosts with aplomb. Fantastic stuff. There's the Brentford view on there as well. Harriet mentioned Billy before, so loads of reasons. So download the app, get stuck in, you get some tokens to have a little bit of a go, and we reckon you'll stick with us because most people do. But enjoy your weekend. If you're out and about in your divisioning, enjoy all that. Enjoy the match on Saturday, and as always, up the Reds. Thanks to my guests, thanks to you guys. One love from Harriet. Up the Reds.
Sports Social Podcast Network.